no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
You make very valid points there, Dave. And I wonder if Blake Wheeler himself at some point in time and Paul Maurice, because they seem to be so simpatico and they seem to have such a tremendous relationship with one another, if they might have that quote-unquote difficult conversation. And all of a sudden, to your point, if he's playing, if he's got matchup advantages, if he's playing against third-pairing defensemen, boy, maybe you see his numbers increase. Because I don't think he's washed up.
No, I don't think so either.
But you know, maybe night in, night out against top-level defense, he might not be what he was two, three, four years ago, which is perfectly reasonable because he's older.
Well, so I was going to say, Drew, I mean, this is a perfect example. And, you know, I got to give my boy Garrett Hole, you know, credit for this here. I mean, this is an example of where points don't tell you how well a player is playing. You look at the points, and I believe Wheeler is fourth on the team in scoring, fourth or fifth on the team in scoring, 24 points.
A point behind Kyle Connor.
Yeah, so you're talking about, what is that, 0.9, almost a point a game, right? So obviously, you how bad could he be playing? But as you mentioned, like, you have to dive a little bit deeper, delve a little bit deeper into what's happening here. A lot of that is because he's on the first power play unit. So if you gave Mason Appleton, you know, first power play time, he's going to have more points as well. Anybody's going to have more points when you're, you know, in a man advantage situation. So the reality is that, you know, Wheeler hasn't done enough at even strength. And as we know, the majority of the game is played at 5-on-5. Sure, you're going to have some games, you know, where you have four or five power plays, but in a game like Thursday night, you know, the Jets only had either one or two. I forget. It was really a partial power play. It was really only one full power play, right? So it's not like we're saying, like you said, we're not saying Wheeler is a bad player. We're just saying he can be better on both sides of the puck.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on our social media platforms. Great conversation happening, you know, in our chat. And we love that everyone's joining us on this Saturday morning. So great to see everybody. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Continuing our conversation, which Winnipeg Jets players are meeting our expectations, are below our expectations, or are exceeding our expectations at basically the halfway mark of the season, we move to a pending restricted free agent, Andrew Copp. 26 games played for the Jets, 5 goals, 12 assists, 17 points, 10 of those 17 coming in a 5-on-5 situation. He was playing a top 6 role earlier in the season. He's now playing in that third line role with Appleton and Lowry. His Corsi percentage is 47.78%, and his expected goals for is 47.77%. Andrew Copp, meeting, exceeding, or below expectations halfway through this 2021 season?
He's meeting at my expectations, and you know, earlier on in the season, he was probably, you know, exceeding your expectations, but you know what you're going to get out of Andrew Copp. We've talked about this. Like, he's a guy that you can play in your top six easily, and you know what you're going to get, but we know that he's now, you know, part of that third line with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton, and Copp and Lowry have been together for, you know, going on 4 years now. So he just gives you a lot of stability. And, you know, he's a guy that it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens, because, you know, we expect the Jets to protect him. I think most people would. And you wonder, you know, what his next contract is going to be. And I'm more so not just the cap hit boys. I wonder, you know, how many years he's going to get. I don't necessarily think he's going to get like a 6 or 7 year deal, but you'd have to think it, you know, Andrew Copp, what is he, 26 years old, 27 years old? He's going to be looking for, you know, that longer term deal, right? So I don't know if that's 4 years or 5 years. And we know that he's one of the favorites of Paul Maurice. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, Copp is just a player that I think has taken a nice trajectory. He wasn't a high draft pick. Dave knows that. And, you know, he's just a solid hockey player. Is he a third liner? Yeah, he's a third liner, but he's not a guy that, you know, you would say, you know, is a above average top six forward, even though he's got great possession numbers and he can play in that role. So, you know, I can't find another word that's better than just a solid third line hockey player.
Dave, do you agree with Ezzy? Is he meeting your expectations? It's sort of interesting, you know, what he was playing so well earlier in the year. He's still playing well, but he was putting up that.
But he's changed. Well, he's changed his role though, right?
That's right.
His role isn't to score right now. His role is more of a shutdown. You know, if you put in the offense, Mason Appleton obviously has been doing that for that line as well. And I think to your point, Drew, I would say I actually think he's still exceeding my expectations. I've had a high regard for Andrew Kopp. I see him around the rink. I understand his dedication to hockey and, you know, he really has, I mean, look, all these, you can't get to where these guys get without having an internal fire. They all have it. You can't say, oh, this guy got to the NHL because he's lazy. None of these guys are lazy. They've all got this unbelievable level of talent, you know, and that's the irony, right? People will nitpick a fourth liner like Nate Thompson and you watch this guy play and he'll blow your mind with what he could do on a rink just in front of you. And it's easy, right, to be an armchair quarterback and to make these calls from up here. But I think like a guy like Andrew Kopp, his internal fire is just no fire pun, no pun intended, but his fire is just,
hopefully that fire won't, come out of the wall there.
This vision of that. I don't know if you saw, but there was like a ESPN clip where I was watching it the other day.
Yes, the wall collapsed.
And the wall collapsed on the guy. And I just had this vision. I'm like, I really hope this doesn't fall on my head. That would be, it would make for unfortunate. I would hate to be that guy who somehow ends up being a repetitive clip. That's more Ezzy's role than mine. But, the point is that I think a guy like Andrew Kopp is, again, I think he's that Swiss Army knife that we've always talked about. He does, coaches love a player like that because you can throw them into any situation and they make whatever they're given better. And I think so, but to the point when he was put in that role of offensive player, offensive line, he was able to do with it what, you know, he had done with when not given when more limited opportunities. So I think he's exceeded my expectations.
And to your point there, Dave, I mean, exactly, like he's clamored for that opportunity and he's been champing at the bit for that opportunity and he got that opportunity and he proved himself. So I think he can sort of use it. It was a small window of an opportunity because right. The Jets, you know, don't need him necessarily in that role. That's not where he's best suited for the team, but he can say, you know, as he's an RFA and then if he becomes a UFA after the next season, he can say that look what I can do when given a top six role. And that's right. I think a feather in his cap. Paul Stastny, moving on, meeting expectations, below expectations, exceeding expectations. That's the discussion here this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul Stastny comes back to Winnipeg, of course, on from Vegas in the offseason. He's played 26 games for the Jets. He's got 8 goals. He's got 7 assists, 15 points, 11 of those 15 are at 5-on-5, 48.92 Corsi 4, and along with Ehlers and Perreault, one of only 3 Jets forwards to have a positive expected goals for percentage, 50.11%. Stastny meeting, below, or exceeding expectations.
I love it, Drew, that you keep going back to the Corsi and the expected goals. It's important. These are important stats. Stastny has met my expectations. Similar to what we were talking about, you know, with the Jets big boys, Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers, Wheeler, like the expectations are really high. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I remember when we were talking about it, when we were still back on TSN 1290 talking about it, and people were talking about, you know, Stastny's 35 and he's, you know, he's not as good as he was 3 years ago. Have you been watching him? Like, he obviously tied up the game on Thursday night. He's not a guy that, you know, anybody expected to be a point per game player. I mean, if you did expect him to be that, then you were false. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, 15 points. I mean, that's 8 goals. I mean, what he does, face-offs, the intangibles, right? Like you mentioned, he's a good presence in the locker room. He's a good presence on the bench. Like he has had the expected impact, you know, that Kevin Cheveldayoff and the coaching staff expected. So, you know, I'll let Dave M get in here, but, you know, he's come as advertised. Stastny, he's got over 970 games of NHL experience. If you've watched him throughout his career, yeah, he's not a guy that's a 60-point player, 70-point player in the regular season anymore. He's more in the kind of 40 to 50-point range. But when you throw in, you know, what he does on the defensive side of the puck and all of his other good qualities, he's exactly what this team needed. And he's playing on the wings, a position that he hasn't played much throughout his NHL career, right? And he's excelling on that top line. So, love Stastny's game and love what he's brought to the Jets.
Dave? Yeah, I would have to go with exceeding my expectations, because I think when you read what was going on with him in Vegas, it seemed like he was a guy who was, you know, a guy they could afford to get rid of, and or they couldn't afford to keep him, I should say, based on what they were doing in terms of their salary cap. And you thought to yourself, well, are they going to be able to recreate that magic? Is he going to be able to come in and provide for the Jets what was done with that, you know, run to the Western Conference Finals? And that's, you know, it's for an older player, that's a tough burden to tough cross to bear. And I think he's done a more than admirable job. I think he's been, to Ezzie's point, he's done whatever you've asked of him to do, right? He's kind of an older, wiser, I would say more talented offensively, Andrew Kopp, in that sense, that you can really put him into any situation and he'll thrive with it. And such an intelligent hockey player. And I really, you know, it's amazing because we have a phenomenal photographer, well, we have two, but Colby Spence, Alexander James are the Illegal Curve photographers. And often Colby, and we don't necessarily always use the photos, but you see what he does, and he'll send me pictures throughout the course of a game. And there's so many instances of Paul Stastny on the bench talking to younger players, younger by younger, I mean like anybody than him, essentially. But he'll talk to these guys and he'll be instructive. And he's almost like you're almost getting the benefit of the old school player coach in a guy like Paul Stastny to me. So I think he's exceeded my expectations. He's a guy who I think hasn't looked out of place. And again, you're always worried about that, you know, guy who's going to drop off in his game as they hit that mid 30 range. But I mean, he just looks like a guy, to Ezzie's point, who's been asked to go to the wing, a position he's really never played, you know, maybe here and there, but really not a position he's naturally inclined to play. And just that high hockey IQ allows him to adjust and continue to thrive. So he's definitely exceeded my expectations.
Chris Johnston of Sportsnet is going to join us in a matter of seconds. One more player I want to do before we bring in CJ. Mason Appleton, 26 games played, 7 goals, 6 assists, 13 points, 9 of the 13 at 5-on-5. Corsi 4, 49.28%. And expected goals for at 49.88%. Quickly, guys, meeting, matching, exceeding expectations with Mason Appleton.
Yeah, this one's very easy, boys. Sorry, just had to quickly unmute myself there. Mason Appleton has exceeded expectations. I mean, Dave's talked about this many times. Like, he has smashed his personal career best. 7 goals for him, you know, halfway through the season, even though it's a short season, makes him even more impressive. You know, he's just been excellent on that third line. So that's an easy one for me.
And I'll quickly there just say, he's definitely exceeded expectations. There's no question about it.
There we go. We're pleased to welcome to the program now good friend of ours from Sportsnet. He's their senior hockey writer. Chris Johnston joins us on the show. Chris, am I out of place in calling you the marathon man? Let's start with that, because you're doing some great activities. You're raising money in support of COVID, and not in support of COVID, in support, I guess, of COVID and people being impacted by COVID. You're running, you've been running nonstop basically throughout this entire year.
Yeah, I'm so annoying. I'm aware of that. I'm sorry. but yeah, I've done, I think, 318 days in a row ever since April 30th of 2020 through this morning. And, you know, honestly, that started kind of naturally. Like 10 years ago, I used to be a pretty avid runner. Life gets busy. Work gets busy. Traveled more. I got out of it. And then, you know, when the pandemic started, I basically seized on the opportunity that I was stuck at home like everyone else. And not traveling and not as busy with work. So I started running every day, and it actually was just, it was more a mental health thing than anything for me. It just gave me a small goal every day that I could achieve, no matter, it kind of allowed me to like push everything else aside. Cause you know, I think in the early days of this, a lot of people probably had a lot of burdens, but you're worried. I'm worried about my dad. I'm worried about what's going to happen to my job, what's going on with the league, my bills, all that stuff. And so it kind of started naturally. And then now, as I'm coming up on a year, on April 29th, I'm going to run a marathon to end my year. And I've started talking about this a little bit to help the Conquer COVID charity raise some money.
It's an absolutely tremendous cause. If people want to donate, because this is, you know, you're doing the Lord's work here. Where can they donate some money if they want to support your cause there, Chris?
They can go to either conquercovid19.ca is the website of the charity directly, or, you know, I have a pinned tweet at the top of my page, Reporter Chris, that has that info as well, if you're interested. And you know, anything you can give, and you know, even if it's not money, just trying really to put some focus on the fact that we all got to pick each other up coming out of this. I think, you know, hopefully some good comes to humanity and our society, you know, for the struggles that have happened here in the last year. And so, you know, give there or give with your time and your energy somewhere else, and I'll be happy.
It's a, like I said, it's a wonderful thing you're doing. I mean, we're three guys who are more likely to run to the fridge than we are to run any sort of kilometers or miles. So seeing what you're doing is incredibly admirable. Obviously, Chris, we brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Canadian division, the NHL as a whole. Game three between the Jets and the Leafs goes tonight. You know, from what you've seen in the first two games, you know, what's your perspective of the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, we live and breathe it every night. You know, our audience, our viewers, and those who are going to listen to the podcast live and breathe it every night. You're based in Toronto. What are you seeing from the Winnipeg Jets as you've seen them the last couple games?
Well, you know, an elite goaltender and the kind of offense they have can take you pretty far. You know, I'm certainly not going to place limitations on their team, but you know, I would have some big picture concerns maybe about the number of chances they're giving up. And you know, look, these last two games maybe are at the high end even. I'm not sure that's representative of, you know, what the Jets are doing night in and night out. But, you know, it's kind of a bit of a playing with fire style. But, look, if Hellebuck is that good and as good as he was last season, certainly, you know, we're seeing some nice offensive performances. And I, you know, I like the fit of having Pierre-Luc Dubois on this team too. You know, they're a threat to come out of the division. I think it'd be foolish to think otherwise. And so I've really enjoyed the first two games of that, especially the last one was pretty entertaining. And, you know, I wonder as we kind of inch closer to the deadline here, if Kevin Cheveldayoff and the front office aren't enticed to try to do something to solidify the defensive game a little bit. I'm not saying it's one trade away or anything, but, you know, I do think that that's probably their biggest area of vulnerability is that, you can only ask so much of your goaltender.
No, Chris, there's a lot of Leafs that we could talk about that were impressive in that game on Thursday night. Mitch Marner was really good. John Tavares, obviously, you know, 1-on-3, making that pass to William Nylander. It was just an incredible individual effort. But, you know, Austin Matthews has been absolutely feasting on the Jets and the rest of the North Division. I mean, it's tough to not think that, you know, this is a player who's motivated, you know, to take this team to know farther in the playoffs. Like, what have you seen different about Austin Matthews? Because we know the offensive talent's there, you know, the 47 goals last year, but is this a player who's possibly motivated in a different way maybe than we've seen in previous years?
Yeah, I think he's right in the sweet spot of his career, right? I mean, it's his fifth season, 23 years old, you know, physically mature, mentally mature, you know, has been through all this. And, you know, this is by far, and look, we're only talking about 27, 28 games, whatever it is, but it's been the best version of Austin we've seen here in Toronto. And it's not as though anything we saw in the past was poor by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, he's improved. And you know, you see it for sure in his all around game. You know, I think sometimes that sort of thing becomes a narrative or gets repeated. You know, I can tell you with certainty, you know, defensively, his impacts on the team are huge. You know, he's often playing below the goal line in the Leafs' own zone. He's you know, 6'3". He's not out there throwing big body checks that would get him on an old school Rock'em Sock'em tape, but he's using his size in a way that's advantageous defensively for the Leafs. And then, you know, obviously his shot has allowed him to score a lot of goals, which, you know, has been consistent with previous in his career. So, you know, I just think he's at his peak, frankly. I mean, it's going to be tough for him in the years ahead to produce the way he has now. I think he's at about 0.84 goals per game. If you look over the last 30 years, only Mario Lemieux did that in one of his seasons. I think it was 2000, 2001 in a season where he come back from an injury, but you know, he's scoring at a rate we you know, even Ovechkin hasn't done in full season in his career. Remains to be seen if he can keep it up. He's actually playing, you know, banged up right now with his wrist and isn't able to shoot in quite the same way, but he seems to score every night one way or another. So he's finding a way.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Our guest from Sportsnet senior hockey writer, Chris Johnston.
You know, Chris, we're hoping that everything goes back to normal and things will, you know, COVID will be settled down and everyone will be immunized and we can return to what was normal, you know, next season. And Gary Bettman spoke about that this week. But what do you see in terms of and we know that folks like seeing teams from the North, you know, people in Winnipeg like seeing the Leafs more than once here in Winnipeg and once in Toronto. But we know it's obviously not going to stick with the North. Do you see that baseball style schedule sticking though, where the Leafs would come in for two games, Jets would go in there for two games? Do you see the NHL kind of adapting that to get some more Canadian battles?
That was actually the biggest surprise this week for me in Gary Bettman's availability that he had, is he kind of indicated that isn't a slam dunk. Like, I assume that was just happening because I haven't heard any player in an interview or, you know, even privately the conversations I have. I mean, I just think it works on every level. Namely, it's cheaper for teams. The less they have to fly a plane is cheaper, even if they stay more nights in a hotel. And the players seem to like not traveling as frequently and getting into whatever city at 3 a.m. And as you guys would know, the Jets are dealing with that more than anyone with how much they bounce in and out of the different time zones in the previous setup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it makes sense. But, you know, I wonder if part of what's informing the fact this isn't a slam dunk is maybe the fans have told the NHL, you know, we don't necessarily, if you're paying for tickets, want to see the same team over and over again in succession. But, you know, I have to believe sanity will prevail here. And maybe we won't see it quite as heavily weighted as it has been this year. But, you know, I would think that this is not going to go completely away because, you know, for the reasons I mentioned, it makes a ton of sense. You know, I'm a little disappointed personally in the fact that the league seems so quick to go away from the North Division. Yeah. You know, it's not that I necessarily thought it would stay in its current form beyond this season, but to me, I think this has been great. The TV numbers show it's been great. I think, imagine if we had fans in the buildings, you know, I think it would take it to another level. And so the fact that they seem to want to rush back to the previous alignment and not even have, you know, at least have one of the lessons come out, say Winnipeg and Toronto play each other four times a year instead of two or something like that. You know, that's a bit of a disappointment, but, you know, no decisions have been made. It's just usually when Gary Bettman starts sprinkling those things out there, he's not just speaking off the cuff that it's, there's something else behind it. And so, you know, I would like to see the league change more out of this. You know, as I mentioned earlier in sort of the running conversation, like to me, we all want normalcy in our lives, like a feeling of that. But I don't know that we all want the exact same life we were living on March 11th, 2020. Like, I think some things have to improve. There's an opportunity for change in all this disruption. And it seems to me the NHL so far doesn't want to embrace that change. And look, they are polling the fans. I know that a lot. They're polling their customers. So maybe that's just, it's just a good business decision. But I'm a little surprised, I guess, as we're sitting here and you're starting to see, you know, it's not so far off, hopefully, the vaccinations and more fans and all that stuff is coming, that they just wanted to reset the clock to what used to be. Because, you know, to me, I think at minimum, the Canadian team should be playing more, even if they're not all in the same division.
It only adds juice to the games and probably money in the sense that you can charge more for those intra-Canadian games once there's fans back in the rink than you can, you know, another game between the Jets and, let's say, the Dallas Stars. And, you know, division rivals, sure, but let's be honest, the passion isn't the same as if it's the Jets and the Leafs and the Jets and the Oilers and the Jets and the Canadians, et cetera, et cetera. Chris Johnston, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. You know Chris as the senior hockey writer for Sportsnet. He'll be on Hockey Night in Canada later on tonight as the Jets and the Leafs will do battle. Chris, it was earlier this week you broke the news that ESPN and the NHL have reached an agreement. You know, we know the money is more. But beyond the money, beyond that and the exposure, just how important is this for the NHL? And if you were to inject Gary Bettman with some truth serum, do you think maybe in hindsight he regrets not going, you know, making a deal with ESPN sooner until, you know, when the last time the American contract was up for grabs, let's say?
Yeah, I think some level of this is a recognition that wasn't the best course for the league. You know, some of that predates even my time as a journalist covering the NHL. So I don't actually know all the details of what happened. I believe it was 15, 16 years ago when the league sort of broke off from ESPN. But, you know, I think from just a cultural sporting relevancy standpoint, the NHL feels that something is lost. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the Stephen A. Smith video that was going around Twitter there. I mean, just having someone like Stephen A. Smith, even if it's a tongue-in-cheek way, talking about the NHL, I don't see how that is bad for business. I mean, in terms of growing a new customer base, especially in the States, right? I know there's a hardcore group of fans and a lot of – there's good American markets in this league. But, you know, it's still a sport that's lagging behind the other, you know, major sports in the U.S. you know, we got a different sort of perspective here in Canada because we don't have to sell it, I don't think, in quite the same way. But, you know, just being discussed on other TSN or sorry, ESPN programming, Freudian slip, having Sports Center highlights and all that stuff. I mean, being in business with ESPN, I think makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, that's why they ended up getting what we'll term the A package here. You know, they got kind of the pick of the litter in terms of, you know, what assets they most wanted to buy as part of this media rights deal. And now the NHL is focusing on the B package and the streaming component that still has to be negotiated.
Chris, you wrote about this in your recent column, I believe it was yesterday or a couple of days ago on sportsnet.ca about, you know, the NHL is still going to have to determine what's going to happen in that third round, which will be around, you know, mid-June. And you know, what you've reported is there's a good chance that could mean that there's an American city that's closest to the Canadian city that would be designated, I guess, as the quote-unquote, you know, home arena. So in Winnipeg, that would obviously be Minnesota. I guess that would mean if the Jets and the Wild play in the third round that all the games would be in Minnesota. But is it too early really to say that that's the way this is going, considering that, as we talked about before, you know, with the rate of vaccinations obviously differing from, you know, state to state and province to province, but is that still the most likely outcome, that the Canadian teams will have to play their home games in the U.S. or is there still a chance that you could see, you know, whether it's Winnipeg or Toronto, you know, playing their home games in Canada?
It's tough to handicap. Really, it's in the government's hands. I think it's that simple. You know, the NHL is engaged in that dialogue already. I mean, we're talking about a series that will be played somewhere around mid-June based on where things are headed. And, you know, the league is looking to have essentially some travel permissions allowed. Yeah, I don't know what, you know, deal will have to be struck, if it'll be sort of like a mini bubble, you know, if an American team was flying in, say, to play the Jets in the conference final. But, you know, if that isn't allowed by the Canadian government, I think really the only solution is to move, you know, the one Canadian team that emerges from the North Division down south. And so, you know, I guess the benefits of that would be, if we're playing this out hypothetically, if it's the Jets going to St. Paul or the Leafs going to Buffalo or Detroit, is that, you know, fans that wanted to cross the border and go to games could still do that, right? I mean, that would be one of the other benefits of doing this, and then you wouldn't be subject to the same travel restrictions. But, you know, I think it's still a little too early for me to say one way or the other what's likely to happen. I mean, reading the tea leaves, it seems like our government has been more conservative all along in terms of its approach to COVID, which I'm not criticizing by any means. I understand why. You know, I think that in Canada, we've taken this much more seriously in general with our approach, and the numbers have been better than what we've seen south of the border. But, you know, I don't know how much, I don't have a good feel for how much that may or may not change before June. But, you know, clearly the league in a perfect world would love to have fans in Canadian buildings, would love to play those games in whatever, you know, team's building survives. But, you know, I don't know if the government's going to allow it or not.
You know, Chris, just one more question here, and then I'll let Dave get in. And this is something else that you know, you've written about. Are you surprised that correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're soon going to be at 19 out of 31 teams. I believe it's 18 or 19 out of 31 teams. Are you surprised? I mean, I know this is such an unpredictable, you know, time that we're living in with COVID, but are you surprised that we're already at that number in terms of how many NHL teams down south have fans in the stands?
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised. You know, it seemed to happen quite quickly. I mean, if you remember the start of the year, January 13th or whatever, puck drop, I think it was three or four teams had limited capacity. So, you know, this has ramped up pretty quickly. A lot of it's driven by the fact in the U.S., frankly, the vaccination rate is destroying us. I mean,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Anecdotally, I have friends and colleagues in their 30s and 40s that are getting it by legal means, you know, not by skipping queues or anything already. And, you know, my dad's 72, lives in Ontario here, and I don't even know where he gets in line to get in line yet. So, you know, there's a clear demarcation between what's happening there and here. You know, the league already says, you know, that there's players down in the U.S. that have been vaccinated as well. So, you know, I think that's all allowed this to happen a little quicker than what we have up here in Canada. You know, I still don't have any sense. You know, the Oilers and Senators for sure have put in plans to try to get fans back with their you know, provincial governments, but I still don't have any feel if that's even possible this season for the Canadian teams. It doesn't feel like it, but, you know, I wouldn't have also predicted we get to 19 out of 31 this quickly down the U.S. So you know, hopefully the vaccinations just keep rolling out, and I think that changes the way the governments view allowing people in the buildings. And you know, it seems to have been done quite safely as well. You know, we haven't heard these horror stories of you know, those being super spreader events or anything like that in the U.S. arenas.
Chris, we're less than a month away now from the trade deadline. Are you anticipating the Canadian teams treating their trade deadline like it's going to be in 2 weeks? Or do you think that they'll wait till, you know, that mid-April point to trade along with the rest of the U.S. teams? And do you anticipate, I guess, secondary, do you anticipate it being a busy trade deadline day, or do you anticipate it being a little slower based on all these trade restrictions or COVID restrictions?
Well, you know, for the Canadian teams, I think ideally would like to do their business now or really close to now, because of, you know, quarantines and things like that, just getting players acclimated to their lineup. But, you know, it seems like at this point the prices are still pretty high. And so, you know, I think that that's what's kept, you know, it's always kind of that it exists in every negotiation. It exists at every trade deadline is there's a bit of a bet to be placed by both buyers and sellers. I mean, if you pay a premium now and you get the player, is that smarter? Do you wait closer to April 12th and maybe there's not that many buyers and the price goes down? I mean, I think that that's kind of the tension that exists. And so, you know, all I can really conclude from that is the Canadian teams recognize that it might be advantageous to get players going soon, but it doesn't feel like it's on the horizon. You know, there's a couple other things at play too, though. There's a dialogue going on with the government about maybe seeing the quarantine restriction reduced for players acquired, you know, at the deadline. And so, you know, maybe it's not 14 days if this happens. It could be reduced to 7. I know there's also a component of that about if a player has been vaccinated, does he have to serve a 7 or 14 day quarantine? Mm-hmm. And that still hasn't been ruled on by the government. The point is those discussions are ongoing. And so there's a lot of balls in the air. I still think it's going to be reasonably busy between now and April 12th. I just can't pin down the timing. I'm not saying the deadline day itself will be as busy as normal because maybe some of this will play out sooner. But, you know, we have a pretty, if you look league-wide, there's a pretty big gap between the haves and have-nots. I mean, there's 7 or 8 teams, I think, that we can identify with some degree of confidence already that aren't going to make the playoffs. And so, you know, I think that there's a defined group of sellers. And then there's, you know, on the flip side, there's teams that should be looking to buy what they can off those rosters. So I think, and you know, one thing maybe fans that are following this passively don't realize, if a player's traded in the U.S. and drives from point A to point B, there's no quarantine period. So, you know, the quarantine situation for the U.S. to U.S. trades is negligible or non-existent. Mm-hmm. To me, it'll still be busy enough. But it might be a really bad day itself. I mean, we might see just a flood happen on April 3rd, April 4th, April 5th. And then, you know, on the 12th, we're all just sitting there twiddling our thumbs.
Well, that's why UTV guys get paid the big bucks, right, Chris? Chris Johnson.
Oh, man. I'm actually thankful because as a news guy, they only plot me and Elliot up for like 3 seconds when something's happening on that day. And if nothing's happening, they just, you know, it's the other guys have to tap dance. So I'm off to the side anyway.
That explains why Jeff Merrick and David Amber are rocking back and forth a little bit right now, you know, trying to figure out how they're going to survive that trade deadline day. Chris Johnson is a senior hockey reporter for Sportsnet. You can catch him tonight on CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet's Hockey Night in Canada. My apologies. Chris, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was great, guys, and I hope we get an awesome game tonight.
It should be fun. There he goes, Chris Johnston joining us from Toronto.
Thanks so much, Chris.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs later on this evening, 6 o'clock puck drop. And of course, a reminder, immediately following the game, it's the Illegal Curve post-game show. When the final buzzer sounds, the analysis begins live here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. We're going to break down everything that happened between the Jets and the Leafs. And we're also going to bring you live post-game interviews from the Jets players and coaches. Let's continue with our exceeding, meeting, and underperforming expectations conversation. We left off with Mason Appleton. We'll continue with Adam Lowry, but first, got to make mention that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Whatever you need, however you need it, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out. Check them out online. Like I said, bernsteinsdeli.com. Adam Lowry, gentlemen, started off the season a little bit of a house on fire. 4 goals, 9 assists, 13 points in 26 games played, 11-5 on 5 points. So 11 of his 13 points coming at even strength. 49.09 Corsi 4 percentage, 47.99 expected goals percentage, meeting, exceeding, or below expectations for Adam Lowry?
I'll go meeting expectations, guys. And, you know, you're right, Drew. I mean, Adam Lowry's offensive game is maybe not where it was the first, you know, 5 to 10 games of the season. But, you know, as you mentioned, most of those points are coming at even strength. Lowry's not a guy that gets a lot of power play time, right? He's a penalty killer when you're talking about special teams. But, you know, again, similar to Andrew Kopp. And I think, you know, Dave is perfectly right in saying that Kopp has exceeded his expectations. You know, but for me, even though some people might think Adam Lowry is better suited as a fourth line center with Paul Stastny as your third line center, and I would probably agree with that. You know, right now you've got Stastny, Kopp, and Appleton, you know, as your quote unquote third line checking line. And it's been pretty solid most of the season, even though, you know, at times you've maybe wanted them to contribute a little bit more offensively. But, you know, simply put, like Lowry, you know what you're going to get out of Lowry. He plays hard all the time. He's one of the more physical players on the Jets. He sacrifices his body. So, you know, the offensive numbers, considering that, you know, he didn't have a very good offensive year last year, I think they're right around where you'd want them, even though, sure, you'd like to see another goal or two, but, you know, that's not everything that, you know, is Adam Lowry's game. It's an all-around game. He's a relatively good defensive player. No, he's not a relatively good defensive player. He is a good defensive player. So, yeah, I like what I've seen out of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because he had such a poor season last year that it's hard to say, you know, that he's that he hasn't exceeded what you expected, because you were concerned that based on what you saw last year, that was, you know, perhaps a bit of a new normal for Adam Lowry. And we're now seeing that it was, you know, maybe a bit of an outlier, and he seems to have bounced back to what his last season's production was. And I think you have high expectations for him. I mean, he is given a role, right? I mean, and that's what we always talk about. The coach puts you in the role for success you're going to have, but I mean, you have to have that success to maintain that role. So I think if you're going to be the third line center, you can't just be a checking center. I mean, I've talked about this forever. To me, you have to produce. If you're going to produce goals and assists, then you can be a third line center, because that's just what you need to do. If you're going to be a shutdown, again, I don't care. Like Pascal Vincent always talks about that. He doesn't care about first, second, third, fourth lines, the way you label something. If Paul Maurice wants to have a fourth line of Adam Lowry, Mason Appleton, and Andrew Kopp that shuts down the opposition's, you know, top lines, then he can do that. And then you have a third line that produces. But he doesn't. He puts Adam Lowry in a third line center role where you have to produce. He's producing better than he was last year, but pretty much at the level we've kind of come to expect from him. So I think, and he is in a contract year, of course. So that plays that factors in, of course, but I would say he's met my expectations.
Let's talk about Matthew Perreault, a pending unrestricted free agent, a guy who's certainly got a sizable contract, salary cap hit for this Winnipeg Jets team. He's played 26 games this season. He's got 6 goals, 5 assists, 11 points, 9 of those 11 at 5-on-5. Positive Corsi 4, 50.33. Positive expected goals 4, 53.15%. Matthew Perreault meeting, exceeding, or below expectations for the Winnipeg Jets, in your opinion, this season?
Plus one, you know, A for Matthew Perreault. And, you know, you mentioned all the numbers, Drew. Good possession player. He's been a staple of that fourth line. For me, he's been the best player on that fourth line. Matty Perreault's a guy that can, you know, play on the second power play unit. You know, this is a guy who the Jets easily could have lost. Everybody was talking about it, including us on our show, you know, whether or not he was going to be a buyout candidate. I'm biased. I really like Matty Perreault, and I know, and Dave knows this, he's one of the more popular guys in the Jets dressing room. I mean, this is a tight-knit group. That's not something that we've got into too much, but if you compare this Jets team to maybe a couple of years ago, it's got a good mix in there, and Perreault is one of those kind of team favorite guys, and I think a lot of Jets players, Dave would agree, were happy that no one claimed him on waivers. So he's exceeded expectations for a guy that, you know, there was talk of Perreault maybe being on the taxi squad, if you guys remember that, before the season started, right? Yeah, so, I mean, 6 goals, that's pretty good. And, He's a guy that I've said this before. He's healthy. He wasn't healthy last year. And that's oftentimes something that I think gets lost, guys, because people just say, well, you know, they're hockey players. Everybody, you know, misses games. Well, no, not everybody misses games. He had a particularly rough year last year. What did he miss, Dave? I think it was something like 25 games last year.
He played 56.
Yeah. So he's maybe not that many, but, you know, he missed whatever it was, 15 games, 16 games. So he's healthy this year and he's contributing. And I would like to see more from that fourth line. That's something that we've talked about a lot. You'd rather see him playing 11 or 12 minutes, probably, rather than 8 minutes. But, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, getting the job done in limited minutes. So I got to go, you know, exceeding expectations.
He played 49 last year, as. So you were
okay.
Yeah, he missed a
significant something period. Like that.
Yeah. So I'm going to echo what Aziz is saying here on this one, because I think Matthew Perreault, a guy who, to what Drew just said, could have been lost on waivers, and you would have just, he's like an Andrew Kopp. He's that guy who you can put him into any situation. He's reliable. One of our commenters pointed out that he's not taking penalties, which is what he was, you know, took a lot of penalties last year that hurt the Jets. And I think this year he's really reduced that. So that's a good thing. To your point, Ezzy, he's a healthy player this season. So that's also a huge benefit. So to me, there's no question Matthew Perreault is on my exceeding expectations list.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Minnesota Wild correspondent for NHL.com, Jesse Pierce, joins us on the YouTube show, also on all of our social media platforms. Jesse, good morning. Nice to see you. How are you? How are things down south in St. Paul or Minneapolis or that vicinity?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. It is supposed to be 60 degrees, which inevitably means we are due for a blizzard come April, but I will take full advantage of the nice day. And there's hockey. Minnesota Wild are playing good hockey, which I'm sure Winnipeg Jets fans are kind of met on. But here in St. Paul, spirits are high and expectations getting higher as well.
Jesse, is Sneaky Pete still a thing? I remember when we used to always go down to the Twin Cities. I haven't been down there in a few years, but is that still the spot to go? Because I've spent a couple of nights there before.
Heck yeah. If anybody's worried about COVID, if you've been to Sneaky Pete's, you're probably immune. So I think it's safe to say. No, it's a great spot. It's a lot of fun. It's still a thing. Certainly a hot spot to check out if you guys ever visit the Twin Cities.
Which we do, especially once the border reopens, we'll be back there. You know, we'd like to take in a Wild game, particularly when they're playing the Jets, or a Vikings game when they're allowing fans back in the stadium. But we're here to talk about the Minnesota Wild, and I would say that among my surprise teams in the NHL this season, the Minnesota Wild are one of the biggest surprises. 15-8-1 on the season, if I've got my math correct. 646 points percentage, second best in the West Division. This is a Minnesota Wild team that I had no expectations for. And lo and behold, they're absolutely on fire, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games.
I mean, yeah, I think everybody had that feeling. We all saw how they performed in the return to play against Vancouver. Not great. And certainly there were some changes made between then and the start of this regular season here. But I think just like everybody, our expectations were low. You thought they'd kind of be a mid team. I think looking at the Honda West and looking at some of the teams that were shoo-ins, like your Colorado Avalanche, like your St. Louis Blues, like your Vegas Golden Knights, you figured Minnesota Wild could probably be on the bubble because you have the Kings and the Ducks and some of those California teams that are struggling. But I think Minnesota started out that way. They started out very kind of even keeled, very meh, and they have turned it up, honestly, since they went on this COVID pause early in February. Since then, they've truly been a team to watch, a team that's surprising a lot of folks. They have found a scoring touch, which, as you Winnipeg Jetsers know, they're usually a defense-first team. So to see some goals be going in is certainly a surprise to everybody, I think.
You know, Jesse, I follow you on Twitter, and I was watching your Twitter feed, you know, yesterday, and I saw that, you know, Kirill Kaprizov scored a goal. So I'm thinking, okay, that's great for us. And then he scored another goal, and then of course he scored another, and he had his first career hat trick. So I'm thinking, like, I don't know, maybe one of us is a clairvoyant, but yes. You know, we have to talk about him. He's obviously, you know, in the talk for the Calder Trophy right now, and I know from having Sarah McClellan on the show and having Mike Greenlay on the show back when we were on TSN 1290. I mean, Kirill Kaprizov was a player that Wild fans kept wanting to see year after year, right? Because he's been in the KHL for, I think, 6 years, 5 years.
It's 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess the question I was going to ask you about Kaprizov is, has he almost given this Wild team, like, not, it's obviously not just him, But has he kind of given this the Wild fan base almost new hope in terms of, you know, what this team is capable of doing?
I mean, without question, I truly believe that there hasn't been a player as electric or dynamic or a true game breaker for the Minnesota Wild. You could go back to Marian Gaborik when he was in his prime and had just started out with the Wild, and that's probably the closest that you're going to find to a player that's anything like even Kevin Fiala, who had a great season last year, and he's still trying to carry that over a little bit this year. There's nobody like Kaprizov that's ever worn a Minnesota Wild jersey. So it's exciting. It's amazing. It was 5 years of clamoring for this kid, and I have to admit, you know, watching all the highlights when he was in the KHL, you knew that there was something there, and I think the attention was warranted. However, seeing him in person, I remember that day two of training camp and just watching him, I was like, he's even better than I expected, you know, because I think you still go in with a little reservation, a little hesitation, because he's still 23 years old and he's coming over to the NHL and North American ice and things are different here. But he has just changed the way that the Wild have played. He's almost given all those guys more confidence. I mean, Matt Zuccarello, I don't know that I had exceedingly high expectations for him this season, and he's found a game with Kaprizov there. Victor Rask, everyone knows Victor Rask is kind of, how is he centering a line with those guys? But I mean, it's worked. I think the best thing about Kaprizov is he's not afraid to try things. He has this creativity. And again, the Wild have never had a guy like that who will just take the puck in and skate it. Sometimes he might pass too much or circle around and cycle a little bit, but he does it with such confidence and he's having fun. I think that, you know, as trite as it might sound, him having fun and those smiles on his face, it just ignites the room and ignites the guys. And I think they're happy to play with him.
You know, Jesse, who's been the big standout from you defensively? I mean, there's so many good defensive players on this, or defensemen, I should say, the defensive players as well. But defensively, which defenseman has really stood out for you? And there's probably a lot, but which one specifically would you isolate as probably the biggest impact player so far for the Minnesota Wild?
It's a toss-up between Jonas Brodin, who I think has always been a very consistent mainstay on the blue line for the Minnesota Wild. I don't think he gets enough attention because you have Jared Spurgeon and Ryan Suter and Matt Dumbo, who are exceedingly doing the right things and looking good all the time. And Jonas is very consistent. He scored an empty net goal last night. He has a couple goals on the season as well. So I think he's a really good player. Also, Ian Cole, who the Minnesota Wild made a trade for. A great trade, a great move, getting rid of Greg Patterson, who really hadn't done much for the Wild, was a healthy scratch more often than not. But Ian Cole has come in, and he's also got kind of some of that offensive tendency that the Wild had been lacking on defense. So between those two, I think they're definitely a fire starter and again, helping on the back end there a little bit.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Our guest is Jesse Pierce, NHL.com correspondent for the On Fuego Minnesota Wild, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games, 15-8-1, second best points percentage in the West Division. It's not all sunshine and roses, though, Jesse. The power
play comes.
The power play is the worst in the NHL, and it's the worst in the NHL by a number of percentage points. Under 8% success rate, 7.9%. How do the Wild get their power play going, and why has it been so bad this year?
Absolutely no clue, because truly credit to Dean Evason, who has tried a number of things. I mean, he's just rolled the lines, which he seemed to have more success when he's rolling lines as opposed to the first and second unit. But I think he's truly at a loss as to why it's not working, why it's not clicking. I mean, it almost seems sometimes when you're watching them, there's not as much aggressiveness. They're not really trying nearly as hard to go down toward the goal. I've seen more aggressiveness when they're on the PK, frankly, and a little bit more assertiveness. So I have truly no idea. I mean, the only thing I would say is practice it more. But as everybody knows, you don't have time to practice that. Half the time, practices are canceled because you've got a game the next day. And when you do have a practice, you've got other things to work on. So, you know, here's hoping that it shakes out. Again, they did not have a power play goal against the Arizona Coyotes last night, despite some opportunities. But yeah, it is a grim, grim look in St. Paul every time they go on the man advantage.
Jesse, we have to talk about the goaltending. And I remember when we talked about, you know, the Cam Talbot acquisition, you know, I know Drew specifically was kind of scratching his head, and I was as well, because I obviously didn't know Kaapo Kähkönen was going to be playing this many games or this well. You know, for those who don't know, he's got 8 wins in a row. And I think you would agree, some were surprised that he got the start last night just because he's on such a roll. But Cam Talbot, obviously, you know, picks up the shutout. And obviously Alex Stalock is such a great story because he's a hometown St. Paul guy, but he was claimed off of waivers. But I mean, I guess the question I have for you is, did anybody see this level of goaltending coming from the Minnesota Wild? Because we know that they're a good defensive team, but, you know, Kaapo Kähkönen, I mean, is he not in the Vezina conversation right now?
Like, I know, right? I mean, I think you hoped, because you saw the tandem with Dubnyk and Stalock last year didn't work. I mean, Bill Guerin was very clear about that in the offseason, saying our goaltending needs to be better. So he went out, and like you had mentioned, Ezra, I was probably a little like, huh, Cam Talbot, huh? Like, I mean, he reminds me a lot of Devan Dubnyk in a lot of ways, and you've seen a little bit of that sometimes in some of the goals that have gone in, but he performed tremendously last night. He is the reason that the Wild won. I mean, certainly Kaprizov helped aid in that, but I mean, he has played very well. And as far as Kaapo Kähkönen goes, I mean, he was AHL goaltender of the year, which is awesome. And so you had a hope that he was going to do good things in the NHL, but I had even said, I want to see him. I hope he gets that playing time. And unfortunately, Alex Stalock gets hurt. So it offers him that opportunity, and Kaapo has seized it. I mean, he is so calm, so confident going into the crease every single time. And I think that just, it exudes the success rate that we're seeing, and it's absolutely outstanding to see. And I know, like you had mentioned, he had the hot hand. It was kind of surprising that Kaapo didn't get the start last night. But as Dean said, I mean, obviously you want to still get Cam the minutes. Kaapo can't play every single night, especially when you have games back to back to back like this. And so Dean said right now, post game, he's in a good predicament. He has two goaltenders that he can trust. The team trusts both goalies as well. So, I mean, it's a good thing. It's nice to see things going right in the crease for the Minnesota Wild for a change after a couple kind of questionable years.
You know, Jesse, usually folks in Winnipeg are paying a lot of attention to what's going on in St. Paul because they're division rivals, and, you know, folks can make the trip to St. Paul to watch the Jets play there and vice versa. So there's usually a lot of attention being paid. I have to tell you, outside of the North Division, I have no idea what is going on in the rest of the NHL. But I'm curious from your perspective, because we're getting feedback from fans as to whether they like it or not. What are folks in your neck of the woods saying about the current alignment? And do they want to see a return to where you have the Winnipegs back in and a return for the Wild to that Central Division?
I mean, I think the Wild lucked out being placed in the Honda West, and I don't want to dog on all the teams in there, but truly, it's a little bit easier of a road, right? I mean, you mm-hmm. still have to go through Colorado. You still have to go through Vegas, and you still have to go through St. Louis. But, you know, Arizona, San Jose, LA, it's not as challenging as it could be. So, I mean, there's that positive side to it. I mean, the Wild certainly aren't destroying every team either. They've lost to LA. They've lost to Anaheim. They've lost to Arizona. But, you know, from that perspective, it's nice. I think the Wild have made their position clear. But I, like you, I love when the Winnipeg Jets come to town. I love kind of that rivalry that has been created there. It's, you know, within proximity. The Jets are a good team. It's a fun team to play against. They battle physically with the Minnesota Wild, which is also really nice. So I would still love to see the Central alignment obviously come back, right? And I do love that you guys have the Canadian division, because I think that's so much fun to watch night in and night out. I don't know if you all feel the same way. And also, I am hating the 9:30 Central puck drops. That is far too late for me, and I would love to see the Central come back in full fruition next season.
Jesse, we'll let you go on this one final question. You know, the trade deadline is coming up. The Minnesota Wild, as we've said, exceeding my expectations, probably exceeding a lot of people's expectations. Does that mean that they're now going to be a buyer come the trade deadline, or a little bit before the trade deadline? And what would they be looking for if they do end up buying or acquiring a piece?
I mean, Bill Guerin has mentioned time and time again, he's always lifting the phone. He's always having those conversations, right? And I think he's done a tremendous job since coming into St. Paul and making the right moves that are making this team better. We're obviously seeing that. Number one center is the big key. And, you know, Minnesota is certainly not the only team lacking in that department. But again, as I mentioned, you have Victor Rask currently as a number one center, and not to hate on him, but that's kind of not going to work in the long term. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest need for Bill Guerin right now. However, with the team performing well as it is, I can also see him maybe kind of holding back a little bit, because obviously to get that number one center, whether it be a Jack Eichel or whomever, you're going to have to give up a lot. And I don't know that Bill's quite there just yet. I mean, he's always entertaining those ideas, and he's not afraid to do that. But also with the expansion draft, you have to consider all of those things too, right? You're going to have to protect some guys. You're going to have to move some things. So I think it might be a little bit quieter than we initially thought. You know, heading into the season, I would have said, hey, Minnesota Wild are all in. They're going to be making some moves. Now I'm starting to think maybe not so many, maybe a rental player. But I, you know, wouldn't surprise me if trade deadline passed and the Wild have remained stagnant.
Jesse Pierce covers the Minnesota Wild for NHL.com. Jesse, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime. Great show, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Jesse. Thanks so much. There she goes. Jesse Pierce joining us from the state of hockey, Minnesota.
Discussing- and we should give a shout out as well to the Bar Down Beauties podcast. I was going to try to get that in there, Drew, but you didn't let me get in, which is, you know,
you're lucky I let you talk at all, Ezzie, as far as I'm concerned.
Follow them. It's Bar Down Butte Pod on Twitter. So she does that with Alexis Pearson, and Jesse's awesome. She used to cover she used to work for the team and cover the Wild for the Athletics. So it was awesome to have her on.
There you go. Exactly.
Except she's giving us, she like Mark Dumont is also giving us mic envy. Cause every time we think our mics are pretty good, then Jesse comes in with her pretty powerful mic. And I was like, got a little mic envy right now.
I'll tell you what, if somebody wants to buy us all mics, we will be glad to name those mics after the individual who contributes the money for those fancy schmancy mics. Ours, to your point, Dave, I thought were pretty good, but then we get blown out of the water every now and then. Let's take a deep breath, take a pause. When we come back, we're going to do more on who's meeting our expectations, exceeding our expectations, and underperforming. It's a busy Saturday morning. We're live here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard!
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant. Like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
Boston Pizza's here!
Dinner tonight is brought to you by Boston Pizza. When your family orders a BP meal deal, you can bundle up your favorite signature pizza, like the spicy pierogi, signature pasta like the jambalaya fettuccine, plus a fresh Caesar or garden salad, and receive more than $20 off in savings. You deserve a deal for the Boston Pizza you crave. Order curbside pickup or delivery today at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve. Oh my gosh, Dave has been burned alive. Oh, he's okay. He's okay. Phew. I thought he was spontaneously combusted and he was gone, but no. Dave Minuk is just late coming back to the screen.
Ooh, I want to point something out here, guys. I don't know how many of our viewers, have noticed this, but there is a copy of Back in the Bigs in the corner, and you know, Dave did that for a reason, paying homage to the late Randy Turner. So I want everybody just to remember him for a second, because you know, we obviously got to know him really well. He was an excellent journalist, and obviously we lost him way too young.
Yeah, he was probably one of the best follows on Twitter. He was always funny. I mean, sometimes they were daddish jokes, but his level of humor was always good. And it's weird because occasionally you'll come across something and it'll make you think of something that he's written from years past. And I mean, I guess it's kind of the nice thing about Twitter is that there's still that legacy of his jokes that are up there. So yeah, no, that's definitely a bit of a Randy Turner. I keep going the wrong way. Randy Turner homage for sure.
Want to make note of a couple things. One, we have no reports from Winnipeg Jets game day skate yet, which is a function of really there not being any media on the ground in Toronto. So as soon
except
as
for their own.
Except for their own. As soon as we hear anything, we will let you know, assuming we're still on the air, or if we're not, it's going to be on illegalcurve.com and on our Twitter feed, at illegalcurve, of course. And want to make note, coming out of Carolina, some news, Jake Gardner on waivers, placed on waivers by the Carolina Hurricanes. Probably a little bit of a surprise there in seeing Jake Gardner on waivers, but just something to note as news trickles out here on this Saturday morning. Let's continue with our meeting expectations, below expectations, exceeding expectations conversation. We have one more forward to do in Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's played 11 games for the Winnipeg Jets now. He's got 7 points. Four of those seven are at 5-on-5, 44.64% Corsi for, 43.03% expected goals for. Dubois, in what has been a stop and start season so far, meeting, exceeding, or below in your guys' viewpoint?
Yeah, stop and start is a good way to put it, Drew. And he obviously spent the few weeks in quarantine here and was probably doing 10 Zoom interviews per day. But I mean, he's met expectations. I don't know if we can say he's exceeded expectations because, as you mentioned, he's only played 11 games so far this year for the Jets, but he's an excellent two-way center. I mean, he's physical. He can put the puck in the net. Obviously, you know, it was a beautiful pass to Nikolaj Ehlers on the Winnipeg Jets' first goal on Thursday night. So, this is exactly what we expected out of him, right? Like, this is a guy that the Jets are going to count on for the rest of the regular season and in the playoffs. We know what he did for the Columbus Blue Jackets last year against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So he's come as advertised, and I can't wait to see, you know, what he's able to do in the second half of this season because we know that he's just getting going.
Yeah, I would say he's meeting the expectation. I mean, the problem is when you have very high expectations, you know, you have to be aware of that. And that's one of the things. Look, you got traded for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic, and that's not Pierre-Luc Dubois' fault. That's just a function of the reality. But the truth is you got traded for those two players. And so there is a high expectation on you that you're going to come in and be able to produce. That's just, again, that's a function of where he fits in this lineup. And if you, again, I'm sure he doesn't have a problem with it because he wants to be that player. He wants to be a top line center. He wants to be a guy making the big money. It's clear. I mean, he's a humble guy. I'm not going to say he's saying that in his interviews, but the point is it's pretty obvious that you have a guy who wants to be a top dog. And so though with that comes high expectations. I will give him as Roger just said, I think he's almost there. I think he's working his way up. And to what you and Ezzie just talked about, you have a player who's gone through something that's been incredibly difficult, and we can't just glaze over that. I think we tend to suck it up. You're a professional, just deal with it. But Neil Pionk talked about it when he was asked about by Paul Friesen the other day in the Zoom availabilities about the mental side of COVID and what it means to these guys. So you have to have a little empathy. You have to understand that these are, you know, extreme times, not just for players, media, fans, everybody, the entire world, we're all dealing with this in some capacity, but it doesn't remove that element from within, you know, what that player had to deal with coming over. So I would give him a little bit of latitude because I think that there's still, you know, it's almost like an incomplete in my mind, simply because I would rather be asked this question about Pierre-Luc Dubois in 10 games from now when he's had, you know, comfort playing with Ehlers and Connor and that consistency and, you know, again, speaking of consistency in his own game, I think in 10 games from now, we'll have a better idea for Pierre-Luc Dubois. But I would say he's met him because, again, I have high expectations for him, but I'm also very cognizant of the fact of what his reality is. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of latitude.
with apologies to Trevor Lewis, Nate Thompson, Christian Vesalainen, and Jansen Harkins, and David Gustafson. We're going to skip over those guys to get to our defensemen and our goaltenders, because the Winnipeg Jets defensemen and goaltenders, because I think there's a little bit more meat on that bone as it pertains to a conversation. As we do so, a reminder that this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your house for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So let's shift our focus now, gentlemen, to the defense. And we start with Neil Pionk of the Winnipeg Jets. We know that this is now his second year in Winnipeg since coming over in the Jacob Trouba trade.
Let's not even go over the stats, Drew. I mean, he's exceeding expectations.
Okay. I mean, sometimes it is that simple, you know. Sometimes it is that simple with Pionk. He's the only Jets defenseman. He's not the only one. Logan Stanley is there, too. He's above 50% in Corsi 4. He's the only defenseman above 50% in expected goals 4 percentage. We know the offense. Half of it's coming at 5-on-5. Half of it's coming usually on the man advantage. Neil Pionk, just to your point, as he has been that good for the Winnipeg Jets this year.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll give you credit. I liked Neil Pionk last year. And, you know, when we were talking about his next contract, because he's obviously a pending free agent.
RFA,
that's right. Yeah. I said, you know, he's probably going to be, you know, 4 years, 5 years, probably around $4 million a year. But the way that he's played through the first half of the season, or almost the first half of the season, I do think that he might be in line for a 6-year contract, probably more in the $5 to $5.5 million range. Some people think even $6 million, even though I don't know if he gets that high, but obviously, you know, that's, you know, the job of Jets management and Neil Pionk's agent, but he's been fantastic. I mean, he really can do it all. He's obviously good on the power play. He can move that puck, but he's also really solid. And that forward Pionk pairing, we've talked about, you know, how we'd like to see Dylan DeMello up on that top pair with Josh Morrissey, but Forbert and Pionk have been, you know, the stabilizing force on the back end for the Jets. And let's be honest, some nights they're giving up way too many shots, especially with the high danger chances. Yeah, but there's no doubt in my mind, Pionk has been the Jets' best defenseman this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really much to add after what Ezzie's just said, because the truth is that, I mean, it's hard to suggest that Neil Pionk, who, I mean, again, we had high expectations for him because he came in and was able to be so successful with the Winnipeg Jets last season. But I mean, you can't not say that this player has exceeded your expectations.
Moving to Josh Morrissey, it starts to get a little more interesting now. Morrissey played every game this year, 26 games played, 1 goal, 9 assists, 10 points. Of those 10 points, 2 have come at even strength. 2 have come at 5-on-5. His Corsi 4 is 44.19%. His expected goals 4 is 40.90%. Meeting, exceeding, or underperforming your expectations for the Jets, Josh Morrissey?
I have to say underperforming. And, you know, we were there in 2013 when Josh Morrissey was drafted. Not that that really has to do with anything, but we've been following his career, and we're all huge fans of his. He's an excellent defenseman. He's a top two defenseman on any team, as far as I'm concerned, and he's the Jets' second best defenseman now. And last year he was the best defenseman. But, I think part of it is usage for me, and he's played a little bit on the right side. Like, I want to see him stay on his natural left side. And we've talked about it many times, you know, this week and in previous weeks, that, you know, Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello have formed a much more solid pair than with Tucker Poolman. And, you know, we got to give Poolman, you know, some slack as well because of the COVID-19 situation. But, you know, I think Josh Morrissey at times, you know, has struggled both offensively and defensively, guys. Nobody's going to argue, you know, whether or not he's a top pairing defenseman. He's a top pairing defenseman. But I think at times maybe he's been compensating a little bit too much. It's nobody's fault. It's not that like he's not a talented defenseman. I just think because of how well he's been in previous years, we have sky high expectations for him. And it's not just the goals and the assist. It's what you see on a night in, night out basis on the defensive side of the puck. I have to say, you know, underperforming expectations, but I do think he is going to improve and get better as the season goes on, especially if, like we said, we see him paired up with Dylan DeMello, who seems to really bring the best out in him, guys.
Yeah, and I, you know, Desi, to follow up on that, I think it's almost like a Blake Wheeler situation. I think if you put the player into a situation where he can have success because he's got comfort with a certain type of player, well, this would maybe almost a reverse Blake Wheeler, but like in the sense that if you put DeMello with Morrissey, I think that there's probably, we're not having that sort of that is he meeting or below your expectation conversation, because I think those two brought the best out in each other. And we haven't really seen it in any significant manner this season. So to me, it's a function of, again, you know, it's almost like, are you trying to make Tucker Poolman and Josh Morrissey a thing, even when it probably shouldn't be a thing? And look,
Fetch?
Like, you pulled it out of my mind. I was going to say, are you trying to make Fetch a thing? I thought maybe people might not.
I'm trying to make Fetch work, Dave.
Yeah, I was trying. I was like, should I make Fetch work? And I'm like, meh, I don't think so. But the fact is, again, I wonder why Paul Maurice is insisting on what does he see that a lot of people don't see. And I think the problem is that what it ends up doing is it puts a player like Josh Morrissey in the crosshairs of a lot of people, because I wonder if he's compensating for Tucker Poolman, right? And I'm not, again, I don't blame Tucker Poolman. If the coach says you're going to be the first pairing defenseman, you're not going to be like, you know, coach, I'm better off as a third pairing defenseman. You're going to go and play where the coach tells you to play. But I just think, like, are you putting him in a situation which isn't very tenable because of, you know, what the expectations are with being a first pairing defenseman?
Is his game struggling because it's struggling, or is his game struggling because he's trying to compensate for a weaker defensive partner, basically?
And you know what? Look, he played extremely, he scored his first goal the other night, and the look was hilarious that he kind of gave when the puck went in. I think Austin Matthews kicked it in, but like, he seemed a little bit rejuvenated the other night, and you wonder maybe again we'll see that from Josh Morrissey. But no, I mean, look, again, if you're going to be expected to be the top pairing defenseman, then you have high expectations. You can't be a top pairing defenseman and have low expectations and have a low threshold.
Moving on, Derek Forbort, who of course the Jets brought over as an unrestricted free agent. He's played 26 games for the Jets. He's got 6 points, all of them at 5-on-5, 1 goal, 5 assists. Corsi 48.18%. Expected goals for 46.16%. He certainly has solidified that top pair with Neil Pionk. Anybody going to say anything other than exceeding expectations for Derek Forbort?
No, he's exceeded expectations, and that's what the advanced statistics said about Derek Forbort, that he was an above average third pairing defenseman and more of an average below average second pairing defenseman. But when you put him with Neil Pionk, it has really brought the best out in Forbort. Obviously, there's the Duluth connection, Dave, and you talked about this on the website, illegalcurve.com. Have to get that plug in there. They've practiced together. These guys know each other really well just from being from the same area of Minnesota there. So Forbort has stepped in really nice. If the Jets do acquire someone like a Matthias Ekholm, we don't know if it's going to be Ekholm, but there is a chance, that the Jets are in, that would probably bump Forbort down, and I have no problem with that. So, 1 goal, 6 points, you're not expecting a lot of points out of Forbort. You're expecting him to play physical. You're expecting him to play a little bit on the PK and just be, one of those kind of prototypical stay-at-home defensemen, and I think he's done a pretty good job.
Dave, let's move on to Dylan DeMello. Presumably, you didn't have much to add to Derek Forbort there or disagree with Ezzy there. That's Dylan fine. DeMello has played 22 games. We know he missed those that first road trip after his wife gave birth. He's got 3 assists. They're all at 5-on-5. Corsi 4 at 48.91%. And expected goals 4 at 49.3%. I'm going to sneeze here. Meeting, exceeding, or below? Told you.
Hit the sneeze button. Hit the sneeze button.
Meeting, exceeding, or below expectations for Dylan DeMello?
I mean, so here's the answer. Again, it's based on role. It's based on the position the coach is putting you in. So, I mean, I had higher expectations for Dylan DeMello simply because I expected Dylan DeMello to be on the first pairing with Josh Morrissey. But Dylan DeMello is not on the first pairing. Dylan DeMello is on the third pairing, inexplicably. So, what are your expectations for Dylan DeMello on the third pairing, right? Especially when Paul Maurice, as we know, tends to give that third pairing more sheltered opportunity than his top two pairs. So, you know, again, it's almost a bit of an incomplete. I mean, he's played, what is it, 22 games, Drew?
22 games.
I mean, again, I just don't know that he's in the role that he is best suited for. I mean, is he best suited to be a first pairing defenseman? You know, the Jets have a lot of what I would classify as 3-4 defensemen. They have a lot of those. And, you know, it's almost like a committee of, you know, 2-3-4 D men as opposed to one true natural top pairing guy. And so, but I mean, I just don't see how they're putting Dylan DeMello in a situation to be successful based on what we expected from last season.
Yeah. And, you know, last game against the Leafs on Thursday night, he played 14 and a half minutes. I believe the game before that, he was closer to 18 minutes. And he's a guy that I think you would rather see, Dave, around 20 to 22 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult, you know, thing to really quantify or qualify because we've already talked about it a lot over the last few weeks, right? Like when it was Nathan Beaulieu and Dylan DeMello, I mean, the stats, just the statistics aren't good when you talk about defensive impact. So, I mean, I'll say meeting expectations, but it goes back to the same thing. If you put Dylan DeMello with Josh Morrissey, the results are probably better.
The next four defensemen have played a combined 57 games played for the Winnipeg Jets. Nathan Beaulieu leads the pack at 25 games played. Then Stanley at 14, Poolman at 12, Nikku at 6. Combined, they have one assist. They're Corsi 4. The highest one there is Logan Stanley at 51.2%. The highest expected goals for is also Logan Stanley at 47.39%. You can sort of discuss them in a macro level if you want. Beaulieu, Poolman, Nikku, Stanley, meeting, exceeding, below expectations.
Well, first off, Logan Stanley is a big A-plus, exceeding expectations. We didn't think that he was going to play this many games at this point in the season. We expected him to be with the Moose, quite frankly, or maybe on the taxi squad. But as a young player, as Dave has mentioned many times, you don't want to see a young player not playing in games. So I think Logan Stanley's an easy one. As far as Nathan Beaulieu goes, I mean, it's got to be, you know, underperforming expectations, even though, you know, I would rather see him, you know, as the Jets, you know, a taxi squad defenseman for them. And, you know, Tucker Poolman, it's hard to give him a grade because he hasn't played the full season. He missed a bunch of games for reasons that were out of his control. You know, so I'll say he's met my expectations. But, yeah, there's no doubt, Drew, that, you know, aside from Neil Pionk, and aside from Josh Morrissey, you haven't got a lot of offense from the defense. And when you compare that to a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, right, with, you know, Morgan Riley and TJ Brody, you know, Jake Muzzin, Justin Hull, Travis Dermott. I mean, like, that's one thing that, you know, I think a guy like Matthias Ekholm could really help.
And, you know, it's interesting. That's one thing, I'll jump in quickly, but that's one thing that Paul Maurice was asked about recently in one of his availabilities was the Jets of the teams that are in the upper echelon in terms of points get the, I think they're in the top five or bottom five, I guess, in terms of production from their back end.
You know, let's save our discussion about coaching until next Saturday, because, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be done at the exact halfway point. An update from Winnipeg Jets game day skate. The starting goaltender tonight for the Winnipeg Jets, Lauren Brossoit, not Connor Hellebuck. Hmm. It is going to be Lauren Brossoit tonight for the Winnipeg Jets. No other changes to the Jets lineup. But according to a tweet I'm seeing from Scott Billick right here, Paul Maurice in his pregame availability saying that it's volume related. The number of shots faced by Connor Hellebuck over the last two games is playing a role in his decision to start Lauren Brossoit tonight against the Leafs. Your thoughts on that choice from the Winnipeg Jets head coach, Paul Maurice?
I'm surprised by that. And, you know, it's not, I mean, Paul Maurice's reason makes sense. I mean, how many shots has Hellebuck faced, Dave, over the last two games? I think it's around 80. I mean, it's maybe not quite 80, but it's definitely over 70.
And a lot of those, of course, being high danger chances that required, you know, tremendous saves.
Well, and you're talking about overtime, right? So, I mean, last game. So, yeah, I mean, I understand that, but he's playing so well. Why not ride your hot goalie, right? And I think, you know, maybe the reason I'm most surprised is because next Wednesday and Thursday, you've got that back-to-back. The Jets have that game on Wednesday against Montreal at home, and then they go and they travel to Edmonton and have the game on the road. So you would expect Lauren Brossoit to get one of those starts, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, surprising, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because Lauren Brossoit has been very good for the Jets this year.
Yeah. And I mean, Paul Maurice said something yesterday in his availability that he said when asked about which players were on the ice for practice, he said, we put Lauren Brossoit on about, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, staying in order for him to stay sharp. And I thought, well, that's interesting because, I mean, again, you didn't know what they were going to do, but the Jets are off on Sunday and then they play again on Monday. So you thought, well, he's not going to stay sharp based on a practice on Friday for Monday, sure, realistically. So, and then they wouldn't play again until Wednesday. So if his comment, I thought, could have been interpreted as maybe he's thinking about using Lauren Brossoit in tonight's game. And to Ezzie's point, Lauren Brossoit has played well. So, I mean, you give him the opportunity to get in the net and you'll just, obviously, Connor Hellebuyck will take the net back in Winnipeg against Montreal on Monday.
As according to a tweet I'm reading again, this from Kelly Moore of CJOB, Paul Maurice saying about Hellebuyck, quote, he can have a hot dog tonight instead of having to face the Toronto Maple Leafs. I wonder if there's a factor there that maybe you start your backup goaltender and it maybe makes the Winnipeg Jets skaters, their
tighten up,
their forwards, tighten up a little bit, maybe make have a little more attention to detail than they did in those two games. Further, according to Maurice, this coming from Scott Billick, saying that he initially had Brossoit playing on Thursday night against the Leafs, but because of how well Hellebuyck played on Tuesday night, he went back to Hellebuyck on Thursday night. You know, I'm critical of Paul Maurice, but I like this move. I do think that this might be a good decision by the Winnipeg Jets head coach. Give Hellebuyck a little bit of a rest. To your point, Ezzie, we have Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday next week for the Winnipeg Jets. Monday and Wednesday against the Habs. Thursday, Saturday against the Oilers. I don't mind this decision to start Brossoit tonight, especially given, to your point, how well he has played this season. Interesting, though. I'm glad it came before we wrapped up the show. Dave will have the entirety of Paul Maurice's pregame availability and hearing from the Jets players on the website, illegalcurve.com. That'll be up sometimes shortly after we wrap up this morning's program. And of course, this show, the podcast edition of this show, will be available shortly thereafter as well. So if you missed any of the show, it'll be available then as well. A reminder, we're not going that far. We're going to be back in about 9 hours' time, give or take, with the Illegal Curve post-game show. That's going to be live here on our YouTube channel and all of our streaming, our social media platforms. When the final buzzer sounds, the post-game show begins. So join myself, join Ezzie, join Dave to talk about tonight's Jets-Leafs, the rubber match of the three-game series between the Jets and the Leafs. Want to give a big shout-out, a big thank you to the sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That is Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and our newest sponsor, the good folks at Boston Pizza. We thank them for their continued support of the show. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. A big thank you to all of you who joined us this morning on YouTube and however you've been watching the show. A great conversation, a lively chat. We appreciate it so much. Remember, subscribe, hit the like button, ring the bell. Whatever you want to do, make sure you don't miss a minute of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And the podcast, like I said, subscribe to the podcast as well. That'll be available later on this afternoon. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We thank you so much. We'll see everybody in about 9 hours or so for the post-game show. You've been watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk.